हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 60. Krishna is the supreme Brahman because of his unlimited knowledge, unlimited potencies, unlimited strength, unlimited influence, unlimited beauty, and unlimited renunciation. Therefore, the word Brahman can be applied to Krishna only, right? Because that was by the definition that we had before, that you have something that the definition applies maybe to one area, but it doesn't apply all the time. I mean, all the descriptions that are there then may apply to something else, but it has to be what consistently it's applying to. Does that make sense? You know, so when they're talking on this level, then that means it has to be Brahman. Now, if they say within that, then King of Kings, that may apply to Indra. But these things don't. So it has to be what all the definitions apply to. You know, you can't take, you know, this one here, you know, goes to this one there, and they end up with the whole pantheon there. That's not how it should work. It should be that it's what is applicable. So that's the whole point, is the scripture is explaining these things, so we can't take the words out of, the verses out of context. They have to be seen in the complete context of their presentation.
What page are you on here?
60. Find the footnote. Therefore, the word Brahman can be applied to Krishna only. Arjuna affirms this, that because the impersonal Brahman is the effulgence emanating as rays of Krishna's transcendental body, Krishna is the part of Brahman, right? Because he's the source of the Brahman. Everything is resting on, on Brahman. But Brahman itself is resting on Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the ultimate Brahman or para Brahman. So therefore, we have Brahman and para Brahman. So when we're dealing, we know mechanically that we're dealing with aspects of Brahman, but because it's coming from Krishna, then we're seeing that is para Brahman. So it's otherwise, Krishna is doing these aspects through his feature of Brahman. Does that make sense? Like the material manifestation is being done through the feature of Brahman. He himself personally doesn't have to arrange it. Right? As Brahman, then the transformation of the energies or the qualities connected with Brahman, that makes the material world. Okay? The material elements are accepted as inferior energies of Krishna because of their interaction. The cosmic manifestation takes place, rests on Krishna, and after dissolution, again enters into the body of Krishna as his subtle energy. Right? Because it has to rest, otherwise, how is it held up? How is its existence maintained? Right? So only Vishnu does that because he is existence. Mm-hmm. Right? Pradhan's not existence. So we can say the 24 elements are there. Okay, great. And we can say they all came from Pradhan. Okay. And then all the transformations of these 24 elements, you get all the material world. So therefore, mm-hmm. Pradhan is the, you know, basis. But the point is where is the existence of Pradhan coming from? Where is the existence aspect? Where is the aspect that it can transform? Because Pradhan, by definition, doesn't transform. Mm-hmm. Then why are there results? Why are there experiences? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is where does that come from? That's coming from Brahman. That's not coming from Pradhan. Yes.
If they use the same logic, just taking it further, and then they say, but where's Brahman coming from? And
then yes, but that, then you'll have the infinite regression. So they're using that because infinite regression is a fault. So they're just bringing it up to find a fault in your argument. But the point is they still can't answer where does existence come from. By saying, well, where does that existence exist? That still doesn't address the problem. So all it is it's a technique to just take the discussion about the Supreme off the table. That's all. Mm-hmm. It's not actually a real argument. Because the point is that's the whole point, is energy then requires all that. Energy has to come from something. But energetic, no. That's the point, is that's the meaning. So they're looking at it from their own perspective. So they're thinking, I'm being objective, but they're being totally subjective. His energy, that's how it works. But the Lord is not energy. He's energetic. So, you know, it's just, that's how it works. Otherwise, you will go on like that. So you have to know, it does come from somewhere. It has to be. And in any case, now we're throwing out that God is a possibility, which if you look at it is quite practical. But saying everything came from an infinitesimally small little spot and then blew up and then you get all this, that there is no formulas that they can use to prove that. Because how do you get unlimited mass in an unlimitedly small place? That doesn't make any sense at all. In other words, that's more foolish and takes more sentimental faith to accept than that there is God. Because we're people, we make things happen, right? The elements are sitting there all day, nothing happens. A person walks in, things happen. Right? It's not that the scientists go down to the lab in the day, they do their things, but when they come in the morning, so much more is done. Like the lab itself just does, wow, did you see that? Wow, man, what did your lab do today? Yeah, well, mine, you know, just solved this, you know, problem that we've been, like that. It's not happening. So it's only when people are involved that it's there. So why not, if there's a supreme person, therefore then all this mechanics can go on? Because we're not creating the existence. We're not creating the time, the potency. We're just dealing with what's already there. We're working with the laws. We don't create the laws. So it's just natural. It'll come from someone else. So this idea that they're saying that it's not, that's just sentimental. It's totally sentimental that they're doing it. And even if we're looking at it, our sentimentality has more logic to it than theirs, because we can perceive that going on. They say, no, but science means it's perceivable. This is perceivable. We can see people and how it works. So we can go take a theory that goes back to its people that make things happen. Not dead matter. So that's the whole point, is everything that the scientist works with and everything they do is all done by people. But somehow or another, before that, nothing's by people. How does that make sense? So there's just a person before that is doing all that. Right? Is that... Yeah.
A few of the scientists, they acknowledge God and they give the credit to God. Do they get some benefit in their research work?
Do scientists who acknowledge God and that get some benefit? To that degree that they're God conscious, yes, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But we're not saying it's pure devotion, but, mm-hmm. you know, it will be a gyata sukrita. It'll move them forward. You know, just like anyone who has faith in any way. Like people all day go around doing whatever they do, something goes wrong, then they show their faith. You know, that faith comes up and they pray or something. Mm-hmm. So then that's always good.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? But, you know, the point is why not do that all the time?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. One time, many years ago, I asked a scientist, who was a physicist, about what is consciousness. He was giving a bit. And he told me, I don't know. And I said, but... He told me, I don't know, but I am aware that as a person, I am conscious.
Uh-huh.
But not as a scientist. I cannot explain as a scientist what is consciousness.
Yes.
But at least he was humble. And I said, it was about Veda and Western. And I said, so what is the next step? If you don't know as a scientist, how can you know? And he told me, I don't know.
No, these things, consciousness, time and space, they have no idea at all. These are the biggest problems for them. Because their theories in dealing with the mechanics, they can see so much and come up with so much.
Yes.
But the problem is they can't tell what these three are. And so because of that, they actually can't define. I mean, there's more stuff, like how do you define happiness, how do you define all these things they can't do, but at least these major things, they don't know how to define them, how to deal with them. So it's just one of those things, they just work with what will work for them. So the mathematics and the laws, they can work with that. But where those laws came from, what makes it that you can create transformation, you know, what is accommodating so that these things can go on, you know, their existence and the consciousness that's there that they're able to do, that they can't explain. So that's why I say they're super intelligent people, but their application, their application to the actual purpose of their intelligence, that's not very well developed. So that's why the Shastra, because Shastra takes it that if you are trying to understand the Supreme, that's actual use, proper use of intelligence. Right? But if you're not using it like that, they're engaging intelligence, but it doesn't mean that it's going nicely. It's like you have the car and it's not in gear. Mm-hmm. And you can rev the engine and make all kinds of noise and stuff like that, honk the horn. You know, you can do, you know, raise the windows up and down, open the doors and close, or, you know, stuff like that. But nothing is actually happening that is the purpose of the car. You can say, no, but so much is happening, you know, like that. But in actuality, what does it do for the person in the car? The car is doing something, but the person in the car is getting no benefit. Does that make sense?
This is a missing link.
Hmm?
This is a missing link.
Yes. So that's the area that they don't know. But then the problem is then you have to have knowledge of what's beyond. Right? And so that they're not approaching in that scientific way. So that'll be always be a stumbling block for them. This, you know, the scientists, any of these, you know, modern disciplines, they'll always have that weakness because of that.
Taking the ascending process.
Yes, the ascending, because the ascending is limited in what it can do, and they're only working within math. So the thing is to be able to work with the mind that they can't do. So some group works with the mind, one group works with the math.
Yes.
But the Vedic is you have to work with both. And that would get you up to the position of these people that we're talking about here in the Vedanta Sutra. But it won't get you beyond. That's only if then one has faith in the Supreme. You know, so when you hear from the descending process, then it's revealed and then you can understand what's beyond. So. The material elements are accepted as inferior energies of Krishna because by their interaction the cosmic manifestation takes place, rests on Krishna, and after disillusion again enters into the body of Krishna. Right? So we're just saying, okay, well it's just this. But it's not a matter of time and space. Does that make sense? Because we'll be thinking, something's happening. Okay, the manifestation is there, it interacts, it goes back to Krishna. But the point is how does it exist? How is it taking place? It's his potencies, his laws, cause the transformation, the existence of it, the transformation, the results, you know, the experiences gained, and then it goes back to him. So then we're not talking that element, we're talking about just he is the existence of everything, he is the source. Does that make sense? It's a slightly different approach. Yeah.
In this particular process, you know, we say that there happens creation, maintenance, and then again dissolution. So then time and space is definitely involved in the world, right?
Yes, time and space is involved, but the point is where does the time and space come from? Because we look at it from time and space, but this is pointing out that it's beyond time and space, because it's resting on Krishna. Where's the time? Where's the space?
Mm-hmm.
It exists. Where's the time and space? You understand? We're talking something beyond time and space. Time and space is within this. But the point is what we're making here is that because he has the unlimited is not within time or space. You know what I'm saying? So He has all these, so therefore it can only apply to Him. He's the source. So once something's manifest, then you may, time and space may affect it.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is He is the source. There's no time and space. So we're trying to appreciate what's beyond time and space. That's the weakness. When we always try to interpret it in time and space, then it will always come up short. It'll never fully actually answer or satisfy.
So actually, all the scientists and everybody who is proud of their philosophies, simple argument is that actually they work only with, or they are proud of the borrowed feathers. They never.
Yes, it's all borrowed.
And they have to understand, accept this.
Yeah, it would just be like I came. Let's say you went out to the bathroom, and then I come over, and then I find, quote unquote, your notebook, your pen, your stuff there. And now because I found it, now it's mine?
Yeah.
That's my only endeavor, I found it? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's called Newton's third law, because he supposedly found it,
yes.
But it was already there. See, that's the whole thing, is that also if it's all coming from matter, and matter's unconscious, and we're conscious, consciousness is superior to unconscious. So that even the position of the scientist, because if it doesn't matter about consciousness, then the rock has the same importance as he does. But because he's conscious, therefore he's the scientist, he's the superior. Now, if I'm conscious and matter's not, and all these laws are connected with matter, which is unconscious, my finding, appreciating them, is actually superior than their existence within nature. Therefore, now I can claim this is my law. Just thinking how much money Newton could make if he could, you know, have patented it and then, you know, live off the royalties, right? You know?
There was no internet back then. He couldn't spread the idea.
Yeah, no, it'd be really good. He'd be so wealthy. Right?
So is science always begins with some kind of, you know, basis for what they're saying. The basis is that I'm the supreme controller and supreme enjoyer, and everything else, that's like a given.
Yes,
right? And everything else is just.
Yeah, everything goes from there. So that's their intent. That's actually their intent, because they want to know where everything comes from and this and that. One is just the inquisitive, the knowledge factor of the jiva, but they still want to establish. That's why if there's a supreme, then I'm not. Because that's the point. Because they don't have a problem that they exist, they're conscious, as Bruegel was saying. The scientist knows that I'm existing, I am conscious, that I have consciousness. But as a scientist, I can't explain it. Because the problem is that if consciousness is coming from somewhere, that means that's superior. And then just as the laws of nature you have to follow to be scientific, that would apply. That would be to be mechanically scientific, to be actually scientific as an individual, as a person, I would have to then follow that direction given by that supreme who these other laws are coming from. So they only acknowledge the mechanical, you know, laws of matter, the laws of nature, but the ones that get into subtle and the personal and all that they don't want to get involved in. You know, so anything superior, they don't want to, because then they lose that position. And so that in that, we have a problem with that. But that, it doesn't matter if they're a scientist or a religionist or a philanthropist or, you know, an atheist. They all have that same problem. They're materialists. So that's going to be a problem. So that will be discussed about. But within the realm of science itself, we technically don't have a problem with the science, because all the science is an observation of the nature, Krishna's nature, and then seeing the patterns that are there. And then coming up with the laws, they test it like that, and then they see that it's consistent, so then it becomes an accepted law. But all it is the observation of the nature that's there. So this idea that there's a dichotomy between science and religion, there's not. There's a dichotomy between the scientist as a person and religion. Because otherwise, religion means the inherent nature. Scientists are seeing the inherent nature in something, you know, whatever is their field. And so then they're following those laws. So in that way, actually, they're religious. They just don't accept that there's a supreme. And then those who accept there's a supreme, then many groups, they don't accept the laws governing the nature and the science. So it appears that they're opposing. Right? So one accepts that there's God, and he's the lawmaker, and so the religious aspect, well, the scientific aspects, they don't accept. The other accepts the scientific aspects, but doesn't know it belongs to God, but accepts it. So the point is that you're supposed to accept the laws of God and accept God, who's the lawmaker, and follow both. So for us, there is no problem. It's not, oh, they're saying this, that, how we work this out. It's absolutely not a problem at all. Does that make sense? Yeah.
But now, if I said God, we need to accept something beyond time and space.
Yes, that's the problem. So that, because that explains time and space and consciousness, which they can't. So that's the point, is that one factor makes it so easy to, it works. Right? They're looking for that one theory that solves all, this is it. But they just don't want to accept it because of what Prabhu says, that ultimately I'm the controller and enjoyer. So by accepting that theory, then I lose my position as a person. As a scientist, everything will go better. But actually, they're a person first and then a scientist as an occupation. So their own needs and desires are more important. Just like, let's say, you have a department in a university, big university, prestigious university, and they're well-funded. Right? Now, are there any fights over seats and positions and grants in that situation?
Yes.
Yeah. And is it based on which theory is the best, or which would be the most beneficial for people at this time, or what would be most beneficial for the students or the university itself? No, it's what would be beneficial to the particular scientist. So it all comes down to money and stuff like that. So all down to their personal life. So it's not actually about science.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It is their occupation, so if they get it, then they get the money. But if the other guy gets it. So the false ego, all these things are all coming. And these are all the person. But at the same time, as in theory, they're supposedly, you know, objective and not affected by all these things that the... all those other, the psychiatrists and all those guys say are real that they don't believe are. Yeah, so that's the problem. Yes.
Maharaj, can we say that it's good they're inquisitive, but we have a problem with their process of inquisition? I mean, the
process of inquisition was really a problem also. But inquiry and inquisition.
Inquiry.
Or their inquisition of inquiry.
Of others.
Huh?
Inquisition of others' inquiry.
Yes, 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 like that. Get rid of everybody else's inquiry and only our inquiry. Yeah, but that's the whole difficulty, is that without God consciousness, then there is no real development. It means they can do things manipulating the material energy and they get results, but at the same time is they're also getting all kinds of negative things from it, because it's not in its natural state. Just like, let's say, for example, I take the bark of a quinine tree. Right? There's a tree that its bark is what quinine comes from. Now, in the Ayurvedic medicine, you take the bark, grind it up, and that's what's given. And I'm not sure if they put anything else, but it's called Mahasudarshan Churna. And so it'll get rid of those things that, you know, malaria, fever, like that kind of thing. Now, Western medicine will see, well, you have this bark and all this stuff, and it's quite bulky, but now the main active ingredient is this one point, the quinine itself. So they take, they extract or synthesize the quinine and leave all the other, you know, let's say 19 compounds that are there along with it. So now when you take Mahasudarshan Churna, it'll get rid of the fever, it'll be a little bit slower and stable. It'll build up because Ayurvedic medicine, you take it, it builds up potency as it goes. So it's kind of like it has momentum, it gets momentum. And so it gets more as it goes. But in there, there's never any problem. It never does any problem, gives any problem to your liver. You know, or any other organ. It just goes in, gets rid of the problem, balances that, because that malaria fever can come up because of a particular imbalance in the bodily constitution. So it'll go in, correct the balance, and therefore the disease goes away. Does that make sense? So they'll take it that there's the symptom of the fever, the quinine will deal with that, they'll do that, but without those other compounds, it's bad for the liver and so many other things. So that's the difficulty. When you take the mechanics alone without seeing the greater picture that the mechanics come within, the context, then the difficulty comes up. It's not there. Because it's just like, okay, the modern phones and these kind of things, you know, these modern amenities, is it that people so much out of a consideration of concern just want people to have a better life? Is that why, you know, Motorola, Nokia, all those guys are functioning? They just want people to have a better life. That's why, you know, it's like they, you know, it's like they do the research work. They come up with the thing. They put it out there. They make a nice, you know, they make a bit of a margin. They mark up a little bit so that they can maintain their family and all that. And, you know, and give it there to the people. So then, you know, the phone costs you whatever it is, you know, $100 to make and all that like that. So then they charge you, you know, $120 like that. And so, you know, then by volume, you know, they make some money, they can develop and all that. And they have a life because they're organizing, you know, a bit better than we are. But, you know, not ridiculous and everything like that. That's how it works, right? That's how they're doing. So it's actually everybody's working for that kind of more social benefit and everything. Isn't that what's happening? No, it's just straight money. The point is, if people will buy it, they'll make it. And if people won't buy it, they won't make it. If it's not profitable, they won't make it. So that's how it works. It's just like in research, generally it's way ahead. Whatever is going on now that they're selling, there are many generations ahead of that. But because people are willing to buy this now, they'll let it run until people get tired of buying it, then they'll bring out the next thing. So it's all business. It's not actually that. That's why you see sometimes these small little companies, they'll present the newer technology before, but because they're not known, you don't trust it. You know, and then all these, you know, nerds are using it and they're, you know, happy with it, but the mainstream is not because, you know, it's not. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's the whole, it's business. That's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So ultimately it comes down to just maintaining the eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You know, so the false ego. So that, like you're talking, that's the basis. Then people do that through, some through science, some through politics, some through economics, some through, you know, arts, whatever. Everybody has their area that they like to maintain or cultivate their, I'm the controller and enjoy it. But that's the point, is Vedanta can solve all the problems they have. Because they have a philosophy. So if they accepted this, it'd make it so much easier. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in the past, people who have had faith in God, and it's his his science, they're some of your most major scientists. Like that. So, you know. So it's not a problem. It doesn't get in the way. Okay. In summary, Srila Sridhar Swami prays. Oh no, here. Do we read Krishna is therefore the cause of both manifestation and dissolution? Right? It's all because he's the basis. That's the point. We're not looking at the mechanics of it. We're looking at that he's the basis of this. In summary, right, because that's the whole point. What's the basis? Pradhan or Brahman? So that's what we're looking at. In summary, Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Duruhina Vahini Ravindra Mukha Mara Jagat Idam Na Bhavet Pritag Uttitam Bahu Mukter Api Mantara Ganer Ajas Tom Uru Murtir Ato Mini Gad Yase. The demigods headed by Shiva, Agni, Surya, and Indra, and indeed all beings in the universe, do not come into existence independently of you. The mantras of the Vedas, although they speak from various viewpoints, all speak about you, the unborn Lord appearing in numerous forms. So they're all talking about him. And in some places they're directly talking about him. Sometimes, and most of the time they're indirectly, but it's about him. They're not taking that as something other than him. So appearing in numerous forms. Right? So then he's appearing as all these different sciences and all that. Right? But then why is that science? Why does it work that way? That's because of the person. So the science itself, just the mechanics of it working and making it work, that's by accepting God. But then why it's there and what's the actual purpose of life? Because becoming expert at mechanics is not actually the purpose of human life. Right? It's by awakening one's relationship with the Lord. That's the actual point. Other things are useful in maintaining yourself. That's what they're for. But the point is, if you maintain yourself and do nothing with that situation of being maintained, then what's the point? If something just exists, what's the specialness? That it does something. That's the point.
Yes. When we speak about Vedic science, for example, in the West we have mathematics, physics, chemistry, but in the Vedas we have what? We have Ayurveda.
We have
Ayurveda, that's two. What do we have for the...
Of the sciences. We have the science, we have the rituals, how they work, and the metaphysics of that. And that the science of that is way beyond, because it's basically on the metaphysical, and all those rituals all connect with that metaphysical. So the point is that's what you have in the Vedic science that's different from the observational sciences,
yes,
is that of metaphysics.
Yes.
And so that means then these, because you're coming down from the supreme down to metaphysics,
yes,
down to the physics.
Yes. Yes.
But now when they try to go back, they go from physics, and because they don't actually understand metaphysics.
Yes. Yes.
They kind of have an idea that it's there, like they know consciousness is there, time and space,
yes,
but they can't really tell what to do with it. So I guess another area.
Yes.
And so then, so as you add on, you see they actually don't know so much. You know, it's just like if I had a PhD in one hair from this rug. You know, I have a PhD, I know so much, I could talk for, you know, do a seminar for weeks on this hair. But as far as understanding what is a rug, the use of the rug, using it with people, doing things with it, that you wouldn't have a clue. So that's the point, is that, yes, they've gone into such detail in one place, but would we consider that important? You know, that's the whole thing. You know, it's just like you want to cook, so then yes, you choose what pan to use and what it's made out of and stuff like that. But at the same time, is if someone can only explain in detail what it's made out of and therefore its qualities and this and that, but has no idea about cooking, then is their knowledge, in other words, they can't use their knowledge, so are they that intelligent? Then the businessman that comes along takes that knowledge and then makes a frying pan or a baking dish out of it, isn't he more intelligent?
Yes.
Like that. That's the whole point. Because he makes it practical. Yeah. So then the descending, you have the Lord, then how he expands the creation, there's the metaphysical, is the primary, and then you have the secondary, is the physical. So you can explain the physical by the metaphysical, but the whole purpose of that is explained by the Lord himself. So the ascending, they can't get past this first point of the metaphysical. They have enough trouble with the physical, let alone the metaphysical. Then the spiritual one. So the descending is just so much easier. So because that, it's so nicely blended, we don't take it as science.
Yes.
Like if I take, okay, I go out, get some of the bark from the quinine tree, you know, how you say, dry it out, grind it up into a powder and give it to you, then, you know, then it's okay. But anybody could have done that. But the guy who has this big factory where he takes those things and then does the, whatever he does and then synthesizes and makes this and puts it into pill form, you know, puts that into little tinfoil things and puts that into little boxes and then puts that into bigger boxes and then like this and makes advertisements and all, there's so much better. But that's the point. Is that's what, so the Vedic, all it is science. But then the problem is we don't see it as science because it doesn't look like what we call science. Like that. So already the rituals are there, language, like that, the whole astrological, astronomical kind of thing. That's already there. Then the science of logic, right? Then you have the science of the performing arts, right? Then you're going to have the visual arts. Then you're going to have the martial arts and then medicine. Right? And that means for the body, the mind, the intelligence, all that, not just the body. And then you have the cultural sciences. You know, how does religion work? How does human life work? The science of it, how the social things work, the economic, the political, education, all these different things like that. Does that make sense? So these are your general topics. Within that, they each have so many breakdowns. And each one of them itself is like an ocean. Is that so? Yeah. So that's the thing. So out of all this, basically, they're using only 1/6 of astronomy. You know, for the mathematical part. And they'll know, okay, where the planets are, but they don't know what influence those planets have. They just know where they are. And so that's what you're dealing with. So they're only using a part of Jyotish. And language, okay, they use some words and all that, but it's not important. It's just whatever works.
Yes, you can change.
Yeah, they can adjust and stuff like that. But it's not that they're specifically into grammar and poetics and all these different things like that. Like I got shown yesterday a thing on, I wasn't able to look at it so much, but on poetics, on the meter. Like we just think there's meter that, okay, you can count, okay, this has 8 syllables, so it's chanted like this, and this has 10, this has 12, like this. Or this is prose, you know, like the 5th canto. But then it gets break down to the prose into 3 categories. One is that it's simple words, not many compounds, and so when you read it, it's very pleasant to read. One is that it's full of compounds and it's very technical and very difficult to read. And one is a mix. So you have 3 kinds of prose. Right, and then so many other areas, and one of the kinds of meters is what I mentioned, just count the syllables, and then that's what it is. But all the other ones are based on what it does, its effect, and all the different things like that. So it's a huge science. Okay. So that's just one thing. And so within language, prosody is one. Like that, and then you have the, you know, the nirukta, the, you know, the words itself, and how they, you know, their etymology. That's the whole science. Then the grammar is the whole science. You know, how the words connect together, the phonics, all those kind of things like that. That's the whole science. Like I remember seeing once, I think I mentioned this, that this book on Sanskrit. And you know how they always have the first part is how to write it and how to say it. But this one, it was actually showing like it had a cutaway of your head. And then, you know, the oral and nasal, you know, and the throat and all that, all those cavities. And it was showing that this group of letters, you know, like ka-ga-ga-ga-na, where it's functioning in the head. And then the next one like that. So some will say it, but this was showing it. And then what was far out about it, it was showing how the tongue is, what parts are used, and where the echo is in that. And it showed that's the letter. The letter actually was the shape of how it's pronounced in the head. I only saw it in one book back in the 80s, you know, whether these books still exist. Because some guy spent his whole life working this out. And then because he has no money and it's not a big, you know, how many people are going to buy this? So they print 1,000 of them and some little thing and it gets sold and never reprinted again. You never hear of it again, right? but you know, that kind of work, and that's just taking the letter itself. You know, so that's so like that. There's so much science there that it's overwhelming that we can't identify it as science. You know, it'd be just like, you know, let's say you take a someone from grade school and take them down to the university and to, let's say, the lecture hall. They may not identify that as a classroom. They may think it's maybe a theater or something like that. They want it because where's all the letters cut out and put on the walls and all the pictures and the little essays that, you know, kids have written and put it up there and handprints and all those kind of things and butterflies and all that kind of jazz. You know, and that list of, you know, who's got the gold stars and, you know, where is that? So how is this a classroom? You know, where are all the books? Where are all the different things? While you go in there, it's just chairs and a podium and that's it. You understand? But it's a higher level. You don't require all that to make the kids feel that they're learning something. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that from the modern academic perspective, they think that the Vedic is not actually very academic or scientific because they don't see all the trappings that they have. They have to have this huge university while the Vedic can just sit under a tree. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference.
This way, the modern must say that they are mythology.
Yes, it's my thought, because they can't see how that would work. How could it function at that level? How could it, you know? How could people be that big or do, you know? You know, they can't. That's where they get bewildered there.
Yeah. Can you see that the scientists, they deal with the Jnana Shakti and the Kriya Shakti at the grossest level?
Do the scientists deal with jnana and kriya at the grossest level? Yes, basically. That's what it means, because it's only about the mechanics. Like that. So while the Vedic sciences, you deal with it on all the levels. Purpose, if you don't deal with jnana and kriya to please Krishna, then what's the point of it? Okay. So Sutra 2.116. Satvach chavarasya. Satvat, because of the existence, cha, and avarasya, of the posterior. The effect is non-different from the cause, because the effect exists in the cause even before manifesting. Okay. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar clarifies that the effect is present in the cause and manifests itself soon after the performance of action, thus again proving the non-difference of the cause and the effect in continuation of the previous sutra. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. The effect is non-different from the cause because of the previous existence, Satvat. So previous is the Avarasya. Is that what they're meaning? So the posterior here means the previous sutras.
Yeah, previous.
Okay. Because of the previous existence, Satvat, in the material cause of the effect, which manifests later, Avarasya. Oh, it means it's coming after. So is this posterior or posteriore? Anyone know?
It's after. Posterior means after.
It means after.
Yes.
Oh, okay, okay.
Later,
okay.
What are we talking about? The sutras or in general? Later, previous existence of what?
Means the previous existence of the effect is already there in the cause. But when there's the action that it manifests, then you see it, but it was already existing previous to that. Or the other way is it's already there existing, and then it will be manifest in the future. So either that, if we're talking about now, it was there already in the cause, before the action. And so now we're just looking at it from that existence, that it exists there, and then in time it will be manifest.
Didn't we discuss that already?
We discussed it from the other way. We discussed it from it's there. It was in the cause. Now we're taking it from the cause that it exists, but it's only with action. Then it will be manifest after. So you're just taking it from both angles to make sure that they don't. Like here, this is a pot. That is also a pot. This is a pot. That's a pot. You know?
For sure.
Yeah, so you're sure it's a pot. You just from every angle you show it. Frontwards, backwards, you know, there's water in it, so we can't, you know, show the bottom or top or inside like that. But that's the whole point, is that when we're attached to something, even though we're proven wrong, we'll take another angle to try to show. But, you know, what about this? You know, it's just like, does that make sense? You know, that's the whole thing it comes down to. So you just switch the definition. And then now you argue from there. No, but it's still, you know, he says, oh, you're saying, okay, so the pot has the spout on the right side. What if the spout's on the left? You know, like that. So, yeah, that's the whole. So the effect is non-different from the cause because of the previous existence, sattva, in the material cause of the effect, which manifests later. Right? So the material cause is already in the existence of the, that means the material effect is already in the cause, right? By non-difference. Right? Shruti says, sadva samyedam agra asita. O gentle one, sat, the effect, existed in the beginning. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1. Smriti says, O best of sages, just as the root, stalk, leaves, buds, branches, seed vessels, flowers, sap, grains, husk, and seeds exist in the barley seed, manifest when there are causes for growth. So devatas and others situated in many karmas, meeting with the Shakti of Vishnu, begin to manifest. Vishnu Purana 2.7, 37-39. So you can see why Ramanujacharya took this as his major Purana. Because it just establishes Vishnu as the Supreme, like that. While for us, Bhagavatam, it establishes the bhakti, pure bhakti as Supreme. That's the main thing. And the devotee is in that aspect.
Meaning, does it mean that Bhagavatam does not establish Krishna as the Supreme?
It does, but I'm just saying it puts more emphasis on the other. It's just a matter of where the emphasis is. You know, it's just like, let's say you have someone who knows more cooking, you know, and they know enough that they can host and everything like that, and they're good at that. Someone else is learning cooking. So now, let us say the person who's hosting, then, okay, now we're going to talk about, you know, some dinner or something, some lunch. So they're going to talk about, okay, who's there, what's the mood that's there, you know, what the time of the day, what is all these different things. So therefore, you know, we're going to, this preparation or that preparation, you know, and then also that who's there and the time and the volumes we're going to cook, and we'll make some adjustment here because of that. We're going to, you know, let's say bake something instead of fry it, or we'll make you're making all these things. Now the person who doesn't know cooking, this is even beyond the thing. They just want to know, okay, we're cooking. What's the recipe? How do we do it? Does that make sense? So that's already included in this higher study. That's why it says the Bhagavatam is the mature, you know, fruit, the Vedic literature. So the Vedic literature is all talking about the absolute truth, but the mature fruit of that, in pure, unalloyed bhakti, that's what the Bhagavatam is. So, but it includes all the others because we're just not used to it. But when we see it, it's already there. Like all these purports are coming from Bhagavatam. You know, that they're explaining all these Vedanta Sutra, and you see, is there even bigger purports than the Govindabhasi itself? Because they're bringing it out, giving the examples and everything. So, because Govindabhasi is working on their, who's the clientele. Right? It's other jnanis who know Sanskrit and know the vocabulary and know logic, and so you don't have to get into so much detail. But then the Bhagavatam, the Purana, that's for us who don't know how to cook. So even that approach to it, then we understand it. So since we've started putting in the purports, we've started to understand what the Vedanta Sutra is. When we just had the Vedanta Sutra itself, even with the explanation, still we didn't catch it. But as soon as we put in the purports of the Bhagavatam verses that explain it, now it starts to make sense. So, yeah.
But even here, Chandogya Upanishad and Vishnu Purana, is much easier to understand.
Yes, but that's why it brings it out. But that's what the Chandogya is saying. In other words, what you're doing is saying, Bhagavatam's saying this, then you have more mechanics that you can see in the Vishnu Purana, and then more mechanics in the Upanishads. So if you understand the Bhagavatam, then you can understand all these others. And even if you ever understand the others, you don't understand Bhagavatam, you actually don't understand.
We need the Prakruti, the Acharya, to understand.
Yes, that's the whole point. Without the Acharyas, then we won't understand. That's the third point that is given. You have the Shruti, you have the Smriti, right? So, and then you have the Acharyas. Now we can understand, because Shruti is given here, here's the Chandogya. Smriti is given, here's Vishnu Purana. But without the Acharya's purports, we don't understand. So that's why the three goes like that. So the Bhagavatam and the Puranas are supporting what the Upanishads are saying. Like that. And the Acharyas then are showing this, you know, both of those. Like that, so we see the connection. Then we can apply that into our lives. So that's the thing, is we're supposed to do, the first three are given to us, we're supposed to use the fourth and apply it.
Yes.
So those three, that's the authority. That's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then that Praman, in the categories as they give it, is Prameyas. Right? So that's what we're studying. Then we're able to appreciate that. Then we hear about that. We contemplate it, apply it. Then we realize it means now we practice it. We value it. So,
but if we compare, you know, the Shrutis and the Smritis, then we find that studying Shrutis, you know, takes less amount of time.
Studying the Shrutis takes less amount of time than the Smritis.
Yeah, because Smritis are extremely vast.
They're extremely vast.
So this one sentence over here in the Chandogya Upanishad is pretty simple, and anybody can understand. And you're like, we have such a huge explanation, so you know, we can study this absolute truth.
Okay, no, now I got it. Now I understand it.
So, is it like?
See, that's the whole point, is that the Upanishad is saying the one thing. You may understand the words, but how that applies, right? And here, sattva samyedam agra asita means sat, oh gentle one, sat, the effect existed in the beginning, right? So now in that, it's saying this essential point. Within that, though, we also see the culture in it. Because otherwise, why say somyedam? Otherwise, you could say sattva agra asita. Right? Like that. So, you see is that you have the science and you have the culture. So, they have to go together. Right? But you get that from, oh, gentle one, sat exists in the beginning. Would that have been your understanding? Would you have taken it that the culture is important? And they didn't just say, "Hey, you." Yeah, Joe. The effect existed in the beginning. Right? We wouldn't have gotten that. And so then, what is sat? What is the effect? Because here, then, the problem is they think the effect is the material world, and then the sat, or the eternal aspect, is the pradhan. So they understand the person? No. So that's why then we see, then the Vishnu Puran points that out, at all these things. Like if I say, okay, what is coming from Vishnu? We're talking about a tree. What of that is coming from them? Okay. But what about all these other things that are mentioned here? Would we have brought all those up? No. So that's all. So that means all that is within this existence.
Mm-hmm.
So all it is that the Upanishads are saying in a very succinct form, and then the Smriti is then expanding on that so that we can understand it. Because you say, oh, you understand, but then if we understand, why have we been discussing this one point for the last, 4 months? Like that. Now, in 4 months, how many chapters of Bhagavatam did we get through?
Yes.
And we're still on 2-1. That means in 2 years we've gotten through 5 chapters. Or five sections.
Yes.
You know, of Bhagavatam, of Vedanta Sutra. So is that what you say, is that true? Well, we've gotten through a bit more than 5 chapters of Bhagavatam in 2 years. Right? I mean, just in this year, we're already on chapter 82.
Yeah.
You know, and some of those chapters aren't small. And they have those voluminous purports that you're worried about. Right? Mm-hmm. Then we don't even count last year, which we went through cantos 7, 8, and 9. So that means in 2 years, we'll have gone through 4 cantos. You know, so we're talking about actually thousands of shlokas. And quite a few chapters. If this is up to 80 now, then how many chapters in those other 3 cantos?
Average 20+.
Yeah, so I'm just saying it's, you know, so is it that it's so much easier? Because if it was so much easier, why Vedanta Sutra has to be written to get rid of the confusion of those who have read the Upanishads and come up with a philosophy other than what Vyasadeva intended? Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yes. So that's why then...
Because if we say about the culture, it is an intrinsic part of culture. In old gentle one,
it's an intrinsic part of culture, yeah. And that's why every kid on the street is so intrinsically cultured. Right? Parents speak, you know, just straightforward with their kids to get anything done. And then in a separate setting, they sit and then talk with them about, you know, the poetics and the nice things of life. But practical, you don't deal with that. So you're taking everything for granted. But the point is that taking everything for granted, then we're not appreciating the explanations that are there in the Shruti and of the Acharyas. Right? And so, and it's not that this is not a approach.
No, it's not about appreciation. Appreciation is there. But it's a matter of, you know, completing the study of the entire Upanishads for those who are interested. Because
we're still on this point?
Mm.
I thought I've brought this up at least... Have you not heard me mention at least about 30 to 40 times that volume is not the problem?
Mm.
We get through more of this, that we have all these more purports. We get through more stuff than we did before when we had less.
Because Maharaj, the school sends out India, the Shris, you know. They
are we Shris?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The point is now, okay, let us take this, even just like that. You want to take that? Great, let's take that. Now, let us say we go to the Gurukul where the Shris are. And it's a Gurukul that's not just teaching them ritual and stuff like that. It would probably be the Gurukul in which the Jeers are being trained. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. So, now they're going to study Ramanuja's Vedanta philosophy, right? They're going to study the Dvipadbandhas. They're going to study the Pancharatra, you know, whichever is that. They're going to study their Sanskrit, their Vedic mantras. They're going to do all that, right? Now, this Vedanta Sutra, is that something that they're just going to do over a 1-2 year course of time and then they're done, they move on? Or are they going to spend, you know, 6-12 years studying it?
2 years is sufficient for them.
2 years is sufficient, and then it'll go. So it means every time you go into the, you know, in Udupi, you know, you go through past the temple, back to where the Goshal is, you turn left into the ashram, you go up the stairs into the room where the residing Swami is and the Brahmacharis, and they're talking, discussing Vedanta Sutra of Madhvacharya, and every time you go in, that's what they're doing, but every time it's new students and all that, because it only takes 2 years to learn Vedanta Sutra. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like Bhagavad Gita. You know, it is big, but, I mean, how much does it take to go through? I mean, if you can read through it, I mean, the boys, you know, Gita Jayanti, then they read through the whole thing. I think it's like 3.5 hours. They do all the chapters and stuff like that.
It took only 45 minutes to Krishna.
Yeah. I even heard 30. Whatever, yeah. And then on the battlefield, they discussed it that much. And so, yeah. So like that. And so that's all that requires. Or does Shankaracharya, you know, mention that, I don't even remember it now, but he basically says, you know, out of all the literatures, you just need one book. Of all the studies, just the one thing. Just with this Bhagavad Gita, you can know everything in that and study it your whole life, and it's always new and fresh. And so you're saying is once you've read it once, it gets old and stale, you just toss it out like the, Stardust magazine, and move on, because been there, done that. It's like all the Hindus, right? I'm on the train. Every time you get them on a point to show that the understanding and God be the superior, then they always have to bring up the thing. Yeah, I studied that when I was 12. Doesn't matter what age they're always at 12. I don't know. Oh, because maybe Upanayana, they study it. Like so they went through to 12. Yeah, and that's it. They don't touch it again. So the whole point is this fear of volume is a problem, especially when we're in Kali Yuga and we're not Shrutidars, where we hear just once and then we're good. If we could do that, that'd be great, you know. Does that make sense? So in other words, why is it like that? Why is it arranged like that? The Shruti is there because it's the basis, it's the core point. You have this Chandogya Upanishad point. But now the Smriti will explain that and bring it out and make it practically for our life. But even that, then we don't catch. So they have to make it specific for us in our position. So then that's what the Acharyas give. So that's why Manu, which we can understand, was spoken by Krishna to Brahma in the beginning. Like that. So that means kind of like before everybody. So, you know, post 151 trillion years ago. So, previous to that, then he spoke it to his sons. And then the sages are there. They've heard the information, but now they want to hear this information in connection with the Supreme. Just like Vidura came to Maitreya and said, I've heard about creation, but I want to hear about it specifically in connection with the Supreme. Not just the mechanics of it, but how it's rested on him, how he's involved, how he is a person. So that's the level that we're talking about here. That's what makes the difference in what's being brought out. We're not just saying the mechanics of it. We're saying how that rests on Krishna. He is the person this is resting there. His desire, how it's going, why it's all manifesting. That you won't get from just, oh, gentle one, sought, the effect existed in the beginning. So from that, do you understand that Krishna's there as the origin, and from him the nature of the other energies of Kriya and Jnana are there, but it's manifested as he expands as Baladev. And Baladev, therefore, then he has that element of taking that even further. So the aspect of the Purusha avatars is there in his personality, but just in a slight effect. You don't really see it manifest more until Mahavishnu or Mahanarayan, but he doesn't actually manifest because he manifests Vaikuntha, but he still has that point of expanding all that. But it's only when he, as his expansion as Shankarshan, then expands as Mahavishnu, or you can say he is that aspect of Sankarshan, because you have the Sankarshan in Vaikuntha also. So that aspect of Sankarshan from him, then you have that, and that's then for the whole Mahatattva, so the primary creation. Right, but then dealing with the secondary, the metaphysical aspects of the secondary, then that's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then specifically with the living entity and their interaction with all that whole thing that all started with Krishna, down to Balaram, then to Mahanarayan, then from Sankarshan, then down to Karanadakshaya, then down to Garbhodakshaya, then Kiradakshaya, then he's in the heart and seeing how everyone interacts with that and all that. You got that all from the causes, the effect is in the cause. Right, from those words. You got that from Sattva Agra Asita. Yes? Just when you read that first time, that just popped out of your head and it was just flowing and it's just... Yeah? Yes or no? Do we want to learn something here or do we want to be right? Okay, so you didn't get all that from that. And that's just one aspect. We can take so many other aspects from it. You know, why is it going the way it was? Why is it here? Why do we have trees in that? We have in the spiritual world. So That means all the explanations of that, we have unlimited knowledge that we can bring out from this one at one line of this Upanishad shloka. And that's one line. We're not even talking about the rest of the verse. Right? So that means unlimited knowledge is there. Ananta Sesh is there with his thousands of mouths speaking about the unlimited glories of the Lord. He's been doing that since time immemorial. So then are we saying that this is actually, you know, a waste of time? He should have just stuck to the one thing and then be happy. Then what would he do? He would just sit down and meditate, you know, then that's the perfection. You understand? No, it's the application, it's the personal interaction. All that is what's there. So the volume is not a problem. Because if volume's the problem, why would Krishna expand his energies? Because as Atmarama, it's all happening. It's already there. It means the effect has already existed in the beginning.
So then does it mean that, you know, the Shrutis, they kind of lack rasa, and whereas Smritis have
Do
rasa?
They lack rasa? No, it's just that they're explaining everything, and they're the basis. Then from that, you bring out all these things. In other words, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, is that not a good thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so therefore, the Shruti is glorifying the Lord. Then the Smriti is then glorifying the Lord based on what's there and expanding on that. Then the Acharyas give commentaries that expand on that. And then we sit down and talk on that. And they've written something that it would take us, you know, maybe a minute and a half to read here, and we've been talking about it now for the last hour and 5 minutes. Right? So, you know, where's the hot air here? You know what I'm saying? You know, here, the volume, the most volume is down here on the fourth level. So if we're talking about being succinct, then we shouldn't worry about ourselves, then we shouldn't apply it to ourselves, we should just sit and understand, and so therefore you don't really need a body, you just need your, you know, your brain to be able to think. Therefore the solution that they came up to on Dune, where they're just brains in this kind of like a little jar with liquid in it, then they actually are the pinnacle of, you know, how you say, human existence. And we're not going to get into the words, don't worry. Yeah. Yeah?
I have one explanation to offer.
Sorry?
I have one explanation to offer.
You have an explanation, please.
That actually it is about the volume. And in the sense that...
You mean that it's good or bad?
Good.
Good?
Yes.
Okay, so you're giving an opposing argument.
I will tell you about
it. He's supporting me.
He's supporting?
Mm.
No, because you said the volume is not important because we can understand everything from this little essence.
What did he say? I didn't.
Huh?
He's opposing.
So he's opposing. So he's saying the volume is important, or you're saying it's not important, only this little sutra is important.
Okay,
let me continue.
Which one
is important? Let me continue.
Okay, so please.
It's very much connected to the cause and effect. Shrutis are like a small seed. And the Smritis expand from the seed, and they give much more benefit.
Okay. Nice. So it's like you have the seed, and then you have the tree, and that, and then we get the Bhagavatam is the fruit with no seed or no skin.
Yeah.
We are interested in the fruit.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of, yeah, so you want the fruit or you want the seed? So it's just like, you know, if you like, let's say, mangoes, then all we have to do is give you a mango seed and you're good because it all is there, you know.
But are we not going back to Krishna, who is the seed of everything?
Are we not going back to Krishna? But this is the Veda not his breathing? Yes? So, in other words, the volume is not a problem. Because it explains, because Manu says, you have the Shruti, now how do you understand what to do? And then he gives the answer. He says, you apply in your life what? It means the Shruti says, that is then given in the Smriti as tradition, that then the Acharyas and great personalities and leaders of society then explain, is the proper application, and then you see of that, all that, because it's a huge volume, how that applies to you. And then that's how you make your decision. So this process, this is the Vedic process. This is how it works. So that's what the whole point of Shravana Manana and Nididhyasana is that you've heard all these three. Then with that, you contemplate and apply it into your life. So we just have to do the four. Somebody says? Okay. Yeah, so. Yes. Okay. Then, that's page. Okay. Oil comes from sesame because it existed in the seeds. Oil does not come from sand because it is never present there. Our spiritual substance exists in cause and effect. One spiritual substance exists in cause and effect. It was already proven that even after the effect appears, it is one with the material cause. Even after destruction of the effect is non-different from the cause in another place. That is stated in the next two sutras. So he's already mentioned this before, now he's going into detail. Right? His previous sutra had all this in it, now we're bringing out this detail. Is that because we're working on the point of that pradhan is there, and if we're saying, okay, it's a material a cause, but the point is there is a cause for that material cause, and that is Brahman. So yes, from Brahman comes Pradhan, from Pradhan then comes the material creation. But they're not accepting as Brahman. And so they're saying it can't do that because the effect that's there in the material world can't be there in Brahman. We're saying it's already existing in Brahman. So therefore, whatever you're seeing, so in other words, that you have a pot is because of the clay. But clay is part of the elements of earth. And earth is coming from Pradhan. Pradhan is coming from the Lord. So that means the qualities that are there in the pot already are there in Krishna. Does Krishna contain everything? So that's what a pot does. It contains. Just it contains a small amount, and Krishna contains unlimited. So that's what its potness is, its ability to contain. If you had a flat piece of clay, would you call it a pot? No, you call it a plate, or a how do you call it? The coaster. You know, the thing you put down on the table to put your cup on so it doesn't make rings on the, you know, nice stuff. What do you call it? French varnish. Stuff like that. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that it's already there. So that's with them being established here. So that's why it goes back and forth. We've already established about the two levels. So now we can discuss it on either way we like, or together. So when it says the material cause and the effect, what we understand is that has to be going back to Brahman. So even, because before they're saying no, but you see this in the Pradhan, but the point is as we pointed out, the defects that they say are in the material manifestation, that they say would be a defect to be in Brahman, is also a defect for Pradhan. Because Pradhan is eternal. There is no aspect of misery. There is no, so it doesn't, you don't see that. So it's the same fault. So the fault they put on Brahman is going to be the same fault that's there if they put it on Pradhan.
Yes. Like we that. See that in one of the upcoming sutras.
Yes.
This is a fault in Pradhan.
Okay.
Yeah, what you said right now.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Yes.
But actually, they only kind of project the fault. It's not actually the fault.
They just project it because that's the whole point. You just project it to get it out of the way.
Yeah.
That's that argument that's done before. What would he say is, I can't remember what it meant, what the word was, but it meant you just attack the other person's point. You don't support your own.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that quality. Yes. Because they can't support it in their own.
Yes.
But they attack it in you, and if you'll buy it, if you get disturbed by that and give up the fight, they win.
Yes.
But if you go, oh, wait a minute, this also would be an effect in yours also. If you apply this to Brahman, now what do they do? So that's the whole point, is that's just one of the techniques of winning. So that's why it's not considered. Huh?
It's also called as Vitanda.
Vidanda.
Vitanda.
That's the thing. You just attack their philosophy. You don't support your own.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that you can't attack, but you're attacking to show there's a fault, then you support it with your own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because then by doing that and showing that, okay, what you're trying to achieve by that, means in other words, you want that it comes from something. That's already achieved by understanding it comes from Brahman. Because just as Pradhan is not affected by the winding up the creation into itself, the same way Brahman is not affected by Pradhan winding up into it. It's just like the spider unwinds the spider net and then winds it back up. It's not that when it winds up the spider net, now it has a problem. You know, the spider net's getting old. It's broken and this and that. So the perfectly healthy spider winds up the spider web, and as soon as he winds it up, now his legs break and stuff like that, because he woke, you know, he wound up the brokenness into him. It doesn't work like that. That's the whole point. You know, it's like, does the earth become degraded by the rotting plant life that came from it? No, it goes back in and comes there, and then more can come out. So it's not a problem. That's the problem. So therefore, then you can bring it close. Upanaya, that's the upanaya. So that's what you're trying to get. You're trying to do here, but we're doing from here. So it solves your problems, and it gives a broader vision and all that, and an application. Therefore, then we establish. Therefore, Brahman is the. Is that something? So that's the thing. So Vedanta doesn't actually bring you to that point, because even they, you can say as they'll make their point, they won't actually technically bring it to Upanaya, because they're not actually bringing it near to Siddhanta. They'll just have established their point, but it doesn't actually go through the properly through the avyayas. You know, so they're not using the five, you know, aspects of the syllogism. They're only using what wins. So that's why in the argument we don't have to mention their whole process, because they don't use it. We've made our point. We're following the points. Then they make their point to try to defeat that all. They're not establishing theirs and showing how ours absorbs into theirs.
All the arguments today are just this. All the arguments today are just based on this, like that. You just had to defeat the other person's logic.
Yes.
There is no conception of anything.
Yes.
Even on the philosophical point.
So that's the things we have to get back to. What is actually going on? Where is that root? How it comes down? That's what we're trying to see, is how it goes through, then it actually works. But if we don't do that, then we'll just argue over these things. So basically, we're not using all the processes, we're just using the, what?
Vitandavad.
We're just using that argument.
But can it not be Hitavabhas?
We may give our reasons, but are they going to come to Siddhanta by Vedantavad? No, because it's not about Siddhanta, it's just about my point wins. It's not about knowing and expanding our understanding. Does that make sense? It's just about our position. Because here, if somebody say, "But okay, but we're establishing the Acharyas, it's their position," but isn't it better to be establishing their position than our take on it? So it's always a better.
Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Golka. So the point is what's in those sutras we're discussing for over an hour to just try to figure it out. So there's not a problem in the volume.
No, Maharaj, you know, I was speaking in terms of the different sutras that are coming in the next paragraph, which has a complete connection with the creation and everything, you know.
Therefore, no, but the point is we're right here, right now. And, you know, therefore we have the Bhagavatam verses, their purports, you know, the various acharyas commenting on them. And so that volume does not take away from.
Because I was thinking in terms of, in Kali Yuga, the life is very short, you know. And
life is very short, so spend it doing this rather than being on YouTube. Yeah.
I'm not on YouTube.
Like that.
What we are doing actually, the whole Shadasandra Bazaar is the format which you are discussing now. So
explain.
The whole Shadasandarbhas are in the format which you are discussing now. So actually, It's already established. The Shantanadarbhas are the topmost pinnacle of the
right.
Siddhanta.
Yes.
We're already discussing in the same line.
Okay. Oh, Sandarbhas are discussed like that.
Yeah. The way the Sandarbhas are, we are already discussing in the same line. Like we already have the Upanishadic sutras and all that build up.
Okay. So we've adjusted our study to like the Sandarbhas.
Yeah.
Okay. See, is that even we use it in intellectual pursuit because we're looking at it. We're looking on YouTube for the lesser mortals that we may use a higher intellectual position. But if it's not coming to the conclusion about Krishna, then does it actually have any real value?
No.
No. So then if we're discussing about Krishna, how is it in any way too voluminous? Because if one sage is famous for having realized one shloka, the reason we study so many shlokas is we're hoping that one of them you'll realize. Like that. But if we're worried about volume, then the point is it's not going to be there. So it's whatever one's going to work for you. Does that make sense? Because it's all these things. We're just putting them out. You know? Is there a problem? Okay. We have the ektar. You ever heard of an ektar?
Ektar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just boing, 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 boing. Like that. Now, what if we expand that as, I think, what is it called?
Sitar.
Yeah, it has a few more strings. Okay.
Sitar.
That's there. Now we've taken that three-stringed one and then we've extended it out more. So it has the, seven or eight strings. Is that a problem? Does it get worse as it goes?
Yes.
Now, what if we put what if we put all the sympathetic strings on it? It gets worse again, right? Because every time you play the note, all these other notes, then they resonate and kind of give this echo back and all that. And that's a really bad part of the sitar, right? That's the part that no one likes. Is it?
Yes, Maharaj.
Really?
It's a very esoteric. It's the esoteric part of it that it echoes and then you bring it.
Yeah, so that means people avoid sitar consorts because they can't stand that there's all this echo and all that, and why can't they just stick to an ektar and go out there and just sing and none of this, all this fluff?
There are no ektar consorts.
Yes, there are no ektar consorts, strangely enough. Yeah. Right? So the sitar. And so that's then there. So it's not a problem. Right? If the musician came out on the stage with a plain sitar that didn't have the taraf on it, there's a good chance no one would be impressed. But because he has the taraf, that's there. And even in South, you have the veena, the Saraswati veena, but you also have the Chitra veena, right? Which has all the taraf on it. Yeah. And so therefore, and who plays that? People who are better. Right? Those Mysore guys, they can play that one. Other guys don't. They just stick to the seven strings. So therefore, the point is it goes through these things to expand and to improve upon it. It's not a problem. And the point is this, if you're worried about human life and time in that, why join a 12-year course on books that everybody else does in a couple of years? It means you can read through the whole Bhagavatam in 1 year. Is you do, I say 40 pages a day, which if you're just reading straight and not really contemplating much, you can do. And if you contemplate, then that's even better. But you can just read it straight. The Gita, we have a club, an ISKCON club, where you every day read a chapter of Gita. So that means in 18 days, but some of them, because the second and 18th are bigger, so they'll break it down and do it in 20 days, just to make it practical fit in. And so you can get through it. But why did Prabhupada give, though he gave all the books, why did he give these courses that then take time? Why did the Vedas take 12 years to study? Because at the end of Kali Yuga, yes, they won't bother with that. I mean, boys will be fathers at 6 and girls will be mothers at 4. I mean, 5. That means when they have the kid. So we can understand when they conceived the kid was before that. Girl was 4, boy was 5. Right? And so they don't waste any time with all this esoteric jazz.
Life is short.
Huh?
Life is short.
Life is short, yeah. Does that make sense? So we have to be very comfortable with all these things that are there, and we're getting stuck not on the big purport, we're getting stuck on the essential point of how can the cause help us effect. And that's what the Upanishad said. That's why we have all this, to try to understand it. Because you can catch the words, yes, but to understand what they mean, that's what you need this volume for.
You're really explaining it so well, Maharaj, so we understand it.
Yes, but it takes so much time. And we're still discussing it after an hour and 25 minutes. And the sutra takes... Let's see. Okay. Let's go here. Sava samyedam agra asit. Okay. Took 3.5 seconds. But to discuss it, we've been talking about it for an hour and much of the time, what's fun is that we've discussed something like this. So then the next day I think, okay, we've discussed that, so now we can move on. So then we when we go through and the point's made, it's in context of the next point, but it also includes the previous point because of cause and effect, right? And so therefore then I'll mention as a summary the previous point and just getting down to really essence. But as soon as we say that essence, hands go up, and then we spend the whole rest of the class discussing the previous class.
That has happened many times.
Basically, it happens most every day in this work. In Bhagavatam, it sometimes does that, sometimes not. Right? It means because we haven't. So that means this point of cause and effect we've been discussing now for weeks, and we're still looking like that. And if we took all the sutras that are describing this from the Chandogya Upanishad, we might get up to 10 seconds. You know, and then we've been discussing it for weeks. So that's the whole point, is that the purports of the acharyas and all that, that's where we actually understand. We don't understand the Veda or the Shruti or the Smriti. We don't. We only understand what the previous acharyas have given us through our acharyas. So unless we understand what Prabhupada said, we can't understand anything of the rest of the life. And that's the process. And that's why it's there, because why would it be there? Because if it's just the Upanishad and that's it, you understand that, you don't need anything else. Where are the pastimes with the Lord? Mm-hmm. If it's just everybody and Him, mm-hmm. how's it going to work? Because it's Him, His main devotees, then their assistants, then their assistants, and then so therefore, das, anu, das, anu, das. So that's it. So why this? Why that process of Shruti, Smriti, the acharyas, and then our own position? That's because it's there in Krishna that He's there, and then He interacts with the main devotees that are like the Shruti. Means, in other words, bhakti comes from them. Then the Smriti is then what's practiced by the others in service to them, then when it comes to us. Right? So that's what's going on. So that's why all that's there in that sutra, but we don't catch that. So the acharyas, they bring that all out, because that one sutra has everything in it. Just like the Mahavakya for us is Om. That's it, one syllable, Om. That means all the knowledge of the Vedas is all in Om. Right? And so then if we just give Om, so what's your question? Om. Om. Yeah.
And the answer is also Om.
Om.
I got it.
Om, yes. So that's it. So that's the whole point, is that all these angles are there. So all we're doing is, it means, what do they do in the spiritual world? All the devotees. They just sit around and meditate, or do they sit around and discuss about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord?
Second option.
The second option. So that's what we're doing. And so then what's the problem?
No problem. Yeah. Maybe with this our life will increase and we can study more.
That's there if you're worried about short life and all that. But the point is any point, if it's about Krishna, it's perfect. So it's volume is not necessary.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
God.